And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Andrea Message with us. We're going to take phone calls, questions, your stories, demon possessions. We've got it all on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Andrea Message with us as we talk about now the ghost in the coal cellar. Andrea, what is that?
Well, The Ghost in the Coal Cellar is my book. It's one of the first books I wrote, and it's basically... A lot of people, if you go to a bookstore, you can find ghost stories, and it talks about the different haunted places and the different types of hauntings there. And I take it a little bit further. I tell you the story of the hauntings that are occurring at the different locations that I talk about in the book, such as Mackinac Island, the Paulding Lights, the First Ward Schoolhouse. I tell you about the stories that the people have experienced, eyewitness accounts. And then I actually take you on a real paranormal investigation. I show you what the process of an investigation is like from the very beginning when I actually enter the building and start to do my work to when I'm going through all of the evidence and trying to figure out how to find rational explanations. And when I have gone through everything I can possibly think of and I can't find a rational explanation why I kind of lean towards the paranormal. So you kind of see the thought process of an investigator and you see a little bit of how we do investigations and the science behind it and how we do experimentations and we come up with different hypotheses that we like to test on to see if we can come up with a good theory. And it's a kind of all-inclusive. It's a scary story, but yet you also see what's really behind it.
Andrea, Karen Dolman has been a guest on our program. She's a paranormal researcher as well. Loves the Ouija board. I got to tell you that. Loves it. She's on the line with us, too.
I have lots of friends who do.
You do. Karen, come on and chat with us.
Hi, everybody. How are you doing?
We're doing great. So how is Miss Ouija board?
I'm doing fabulous. And listen, I've been loving the interview tonight. Really exciting. Great stuff.
So, Karen, have you gone on any specific paranormal investigations, or have you stumbled across anybody who might be possessed?
I have gone on a few paranormal investigations that are really deeply entrailed in demonic possession, et cetera. And I found very different explanations for what they might normally call demonic possession. So I have been, and I'm willing to look at the other side of how you might look at this stuff that might be demonic or evil kind of possession.
It's out there, indeed. And I wanted you to take a few minutes and chat with Andrea, because you both come at it in different ways. So go ahead.
Yeah, we do. And I appreciate what Andrea is saying. One of the questions I have is what I look at when I go on explorations myself is how do you determine what is really a fear-based projection of our own accord and what is really, you know, what we've been taught or we've been expect to fear or what is really demonic? Because I really think a lot of times we're misguided in terms of what we should believe things to be. So I'm curious, Andrea, what have you found in terms of that?
What have I found in terms of what is truly demonic versus what is just explainable? I mean, is that what you were asking?
Yeah, exactly.
When you go into any kind of an investigation, it doesn't matter if you're going into it as a demonic infestation or a potential demonic possession. The first thing you always do is you do a very thorough kind of a interview with the clients. And I always ask to talk to clients' family, clients' friends, if they are available and they do understand the situation. And I ask them, what have they experienced? Or if you haven't experienced anything, what do you know of the person's health? I've actually done where I've done tests with were like memory tests a lot of times. Like I'll tell them, I want you to remember a rainbow, the sun, and a crayon. And, you know, then we'll do a little interview, and then I'll come back and I say, can you remember the three things I told you I wanted you to remember? And some of them have really easy times doing it. Some of them have a little harder time doing it. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it could be a little piece of a puzzle, especially if you don't find any necessary signs of anything demonic or paranormal going on. And like I said, there is a lot of psychology in it. And There is a lot of times, that's why a lot of times if you're dealing with somebody who's claiming to be possessed, you do want them to have a psychological profile done and have it done by somebody. You know, in the Catholic Church, a lot of times we have Catholics who are psychologists or psychiatrists that kind of know the theology and also know the human brain and the human psyche, and they will look at the person and try to determine if there's some kind of a medical makeup that will say that, you know, there is a possible, you know, possession, or there's a possible that this is a mental illness, something like Alzheimer's or the onset of dementia, depending on the age and the medical history. So medical history is very important. Interviewing is very important. And then doing a paranormal investigation with the person there and with the person not there. If they're a catalyst for whatever activity is going on, sometimes you want them there to see if you can provoke any kind of a response. A lot of times you want them gone to see if you can find out any kind of response on your own. I mean, it's like I said, it's just the same kind of a thing as with any other paranormal investigation. It's just a little bit more involved because you have to be very careful of the person's mental health as well as their well-being.
Have you found that newer buildings can still be haunted as opposed to older ones, creepy older buildings?
Oh, definitely. Well, I didn't live in a new house. I wouldn't call it a new house. But, you know, I had lived there all my life. It was our family home. It was where I was born and raised. And I lived there for 20-some years because my dad was terminal with cancer. And, you know, so I was home helping my mom and my brothers with, you know, my dad. And we never had any kind of growing up, any kind of paranormal. There was nothing ever there. There was, you know, it wasn't ancient Indian burial grounds. There was nothing. And then all of a sudden, like 30 years later, we had a paranormal experience that we believe is what was a spirit that had either attached to my brother personally, like actually attached to him, or was attached to something he brought back with him, and it followed him into the home. And luckily, it wasn't a malicious entity. And I explain a lot about this in the book, in the very beginning of the book. This is how I actually got introduced into the paranormal and became a believer, even though I never really believed in the paranormal before that. And so it is talked about in the book, but that spirit actually found its way into the home. So just because a home is brand new does not mean that it's going to be paranormal free. You can call spirits in using Ouija boards. I know our last caller there is, you know, and I have lots of friends that love the Ouija board, said that they never had problems. Me personally, after things that I've seen, I would never touch them.
Karen loves it.
You can summon spirits, and, you know, spirits can travel. They can be attached to objects. So it's, the age of a home is not a prerequisite.
Andrea, what did you think and what do you think of the Amityville Horror House?
That's actually a very interesting, I mean, unfortunately, like I said, I was born the year that happened. So I was just a little itty bitty baby. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever 100% know for sure, but I do happen to know a lot of the people. Some people that were involved in the Amityville Horror case, I know people that knew people involved, and there did seem to be something there. There something did kind of scare them, and, you know, I don't know if we're ever going to really truly know. I mean, that was before my time, and I hear it as a third party from a third party from a third party from a third party, so I can only go on what I've read and what I've seen and what I've talked to. And I believe, like, with my heart, I believe the people that I've spoken to, that these experiences were real, but I'm so far set apart from when that actually happened that it would be very hard for me to go after the fact and try to find the answer then.
Next up, let's go to Sam in Azusa, California. Hi, Sam. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, George. How you doing?
Great. How are you? All is well.
I was wondering if alcohol and demon possession had anything to do with each other, because in like 2011, 2012, New Year, I got really drunk and I started acting like real crazy, and I grabbed some wood out of a fire and was just holding it.
Oh, geez.
And saying fire can't hurt me. And then my friend called my dad because he's a pastor and he's saying, you know, I'm acting crazy. Can you come get him? And yeah. So my dad picked me up. When we got back to my house, I was trying to leave, and my dad didn't want me to leave, so they called two more people from his church over. And
did they hold you down or anything?
Yeah, my dad was holding me down, and he wanted two other people to help him hold me down.
How old were you, Sam, when this was happening?
I was 25.
You were a man. Jeez.
And the thing that scared me was when I was talking. Like, I don't remember saying any of this, but what they told me was I was saying, I know you, to one of the guys that was there, and I started naming off his sins that he was doing, saying that I was there with him when he was doing them.
Well, let me tell you this, Sam. I have interviewed enough researchers and paranormal experts, and we'll get Andrea's take on this in a second, who say that if you are inebriated, if you are drunk, if you have drank too much alcohol, you do subject yourself to being possessed. Not everybody, but if you're prone to it, it's going to make it easier. Andrea, what do you think? What have you heard?
I completely agree. Like I said, when it comes to the demonic entities are opportunists. And a lot of times they do go for easy targets. And people who are inebriated or people who are high on recreational drugs or prescription medications, they are at a greater risk. Again, now when we're talking about alcohol, it does affect your brain chemistry. And, you know, you can say a lot of things that, you know, don't make sense. And you can, you know, when you're inebriated, you can do things and say things. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you're possessed. It means that you're just really, really drunk and that you should probably cut back just a little bit. Because it can affect your brain. Alcohol and drugs, they do have, you know, the chemical that affects your brain. But like I said, that said, you are at a greater risk for a potential possession just because of the fact that you are more vulnerable. Whether that's what happened to you or not, because I wasn't on your case, I can't exactly say 100%. I could only go by what you told me and what your witnesses stated. But I would be very careful when you're drinking. To the point of inebriation, A, that's not healthy for you. It's not good for you. And even if there are no demons that are actually involved, alcohol is called spirits for a reason, you know. It does affect your brain chemistry, and you can do things and say things that you will regret later. So, it is possible. People who are, you know, have that little bit of that low resistance tend to be the easier targets, but I can't say 100% for sure that you were demonically possessed at that time just because you were drunk, and not that the alcohol itself was what was causing your issues.
Let me get this breaking story in here, Andrea. Two San Diego police officers have been wounded in a shooting late tonight.
Oh,
police
no.
have arrested one suspect in the shooting, still searching for other suspects. The police officers were taken to a hospital, their conditions unknown. So say a little prayer for them, if you would. And if I get an update before we're off the air, I will pass that on. Boy, the madness continues, Andrea, doesn't it?
My God. Oh, geez, it's sad. I pray for those officers. I mean, it's just, you know, I have family that are that were in law enforcement, and it's just, you know, it's very sad. It breaks my heart that, you know, we've come to this point in our lives. We're going after the people who are trying to serve and protect us. And, you know, for the people who are out there protesting and, you can understand them wanting to protest, but these officers are out there protecting your rights and, you know, they're running towards the gunfire to protect you, you know, and then, so, you know, let's all just kind of say a prayer for them and hope that, you know, we can start to get our nation back together.
Well, and they're such an easy target right now because they're in uniform. Yeah. You can see them. Anyway, back to a quick question. What do you think of EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, sounds of the afterlife?
I actually think that EVPs are a fairly interesting phenomenon. And this is something that, you know, we've been really toying with in the paranormal field and also in science. We've had scientists that have been helping us trying to figure this out for many years. What we believe At least, and I'm just saying, like, what we believe, like, in general. I mean, I'm going by what I believe and what other people that I know believe. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be people that counter this opinion. But when it comes to the paranormal, we believe that they could, the reason we don't always hear them at the time that they're speaking is because they're speaking on a frequency that we can't hear. And for anybody listening right now, I challenge you to go to YouTube and look for these audiology tests, these, you know, they're hearing tests. And what they do is you put on a pair of headphones and they'll show you frequencies from birth all the way to usually about 100 years old. And if you have normal hearing, let's say you're 40, you won't be able to hear any frequencies until you maybe hit that 35 mark, and then you can maybe hear it very faintly, and then it gets louder as it gets to your age. Once it hits your age, you're able to hear from that age until, like I said, 100 if you have normal hearing. And so that's why we believe that we don't always hear it at the time it happens, because when they're trying to manifest, if they don't have enough energy to manifest, they'll speak on a frequency that we might not hear. Recorders will actually record on multiple layers of frequencies, and then it's brought up into one universal layer that should be heard by anybody with normal hearing. And that's why we believe children are more susceptible to the paranormal, because 5-year-old that is hearing something and having conversations with an imaginary friend, well, we can't hear what a 5-year-old can hear in certain frequencies. They can hear a whole universe of frequencies that we can't yet. So that's why we believe that maybe they're more susceptible to the paranormal. But EVP recorders, and you don't have to get anything fancy or anything expensive. You can even still use the analogs with the little cassette tapes. But that helps bridge the gap by recording the frequencies that we can't currently hear and bringing them up into a universal frequency once we actually hit the play button and we play it back.
Let's go to Jimmy in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Jimmy. Go ahead.
How you doing, George? Good evening.
Good, Jimmy.
Hi.
Hello. I had a question you guys were discussing earlier, whether, you know, demons, you know, go after pious or religious or spiritual people for that matter, you know, and I was wondering if possibly a longtime friend of mine, we discuss things like this all the time. I was wondering if possibly it could cause, you know, someone who was, you know, pious or religious, you know, obviously a demon would want to go after those types of people more because, you know, they belong to God and those are the people they want, you know, and I wonder if they have caused those people to become maybe mentally ill from, you know, the struggle, because they are stronger and it does take a lot more, you know, to possess them, you know, opposed to someone who is, you know, have open doors or mm-hmm. normally subjectable yeah. to something like that.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to demonic possession, like I said, they're very picky about their targets. It depends on the hierarchy of the demon. But when they do go after somebody that's pious and a very strong person, very strong will, somebody that's very close to God, and their sole intention is to try to rip them away from God. Because at least, like I said, again, this falls under the category of religion. And it's so hard to talk about demonology in a whole, because then you have to bring theology into it, and it's very complicated. But to simplify it as best I can, at least from a Catholic perspective, the whole point of a demon is they hate God so much. They are so angry at God. They're so, you know, sad about the separation from God, but still angry, and they don't want to reconcile with God. And the only thing that they can think of doing is hurting the very people that God created.
Hold on for a second, Andrea. We're going to come right back, wrap things up, and take final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, I need 581 of you to go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and click the Facebook icon in the top right-hand corner and like us if you haven't done it yet. And that pushes us over 400,000 likes. So go ahead and do that if you would for us. And welcome back. Our final segment here with Andrea Message as we talk about demons and how much is the individual, Andrea, responsible for their own actions, bringing or inviting the demon into the world? I think a lot. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Most of the cases that I've ever dealt with personally have usually been people who have invited the spirits in. They've been dabbling in things that they didn't understand, or they thought it was a joke, you know, or a little game. Because let's face it, the Ouija board is a Hasbro, I think it's Hasbro, or at least it was bought by Hasbro, I believe, and it's sold at Toys R Us. You can even get a little pink version for the, you know, future technologists, you know, for the kids in there. And, you know, and, you know, so people are playing with things that they don't fully understand. They're opening the spiritual world and giving invitations to things they don't understand because they think it's funny or they think it's fun or they think it'll get them on TV. And they bring a lot of this havoc on themselves and on their families.
They probably do. Let's go to Skype. Art is in Baja, Mexico. Welcome to the program. Hi, Art.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead, Art.
Hi.
Well, hello, your guest. I woke up and heard your subject. I don't have your guest name, but...
Andrea. Andrea is her name.
Okay. My father prayed that a servant of God be born to him, and he's of the greatest generation. He flew in a carrier, and off a carrier in the Pacific in World War II. Mm-hmm. And God evidently took him at his word. You know, you got to be careful what you ask for. You might get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so... my parents dedicated me when I was a child, infant actually, and I started receiving revelations in 1969. I had a vision in which I was caught up and saw and heard unutterable things I can't speak in the English tongue, spoke in an unknown language for about 45 minutes, and I beheld more glory than the mind is capable of comprehending in the flesh. And later on, I found out or was led to authorities. There are authorities on the earth that have always been here except for the Middle Ages. And it's called the legal administrator of the heavens, actually. They have their authority, you know. And it's on the earth. It's always been here, like I said. But there was a young woman in Atlanta, Georgia, who was a prostitute, and she told me that she saw the devil or something like that, and it scared her to death, she said. And she prayed that she be led to a man of God. We met in Salt Lake, and she wanted me to cast devils out of her. And I said, well, I've never done that before, but I'll try, and sat her down in a chair with her back to me, laid my hands on her head, and commanded them to come out. And I saw them come out. About 100 came out of her.
Jeez. This, you basically did your own exorcism.
It wasn't mine.
Her.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. And she had her back to me in the chair still sitting, and she turned around. Let me be a little more detailed. I laid my hands on her head, and I commanded them to come out, and nothing happened for about 2 seconds. And then I felt a pulse come through my hands, and I saw them come out after that, and they were furious at being cast out.
What do they look like, Art?
They're compared spiritual to spiritual things. They're not physical. They're spiritual, and so I would have to describe it to you with language that I don't possess, actually.
So, but kind of blobbish, I would guess, that kind of a look?
I can't describe it to you in physical terms. You have to compare spiritual things with spiritual,
mm-hmm.
spiritual things. But they were real, and because she said she saw them too.
Did they all leave her?
Yes, they were furious and they scattered. And then she said she felt like she was going to float up to the ceiling. Now, she didn't, don't get alarmed, she didn't float up to the ceiling, but I later read where Joseph Smith had occasion to cast devils out of a man named Newell K. Knight. Newell K. Knight would not pray vocally. They tried to get him to pray vocally, and he wouldn't. And so the devil took power over him.
Well, was this girl okay after you did this?
Yes. She seemed to be okay, actually, before I did it. I don't know what to say about that, other than the fact that it really happened. I saw him come out.
Now, have you done that to anybody else since then?
No, I haven't, but I've healed the sick, though.
Well, you have some different powers, to be sure. Now, Andrea, let me ask you this, because you've worked with many priests who are exorcists. Is it unusual for a layperson like Art to be able to do this?
Well, it's a lot more complex than that, especially, like I said, demonology is really hard to kind of define in, like, 15-minute segments, because there's psychological, medical, theological, different religious beliefs, the hierarchy of the angels and demons. But in simplified terms, a layperson could, because God called us all to go, and, you know, he said, anybody who believes in me can go and cast out demons in my name. But that's the very important part, is it has to be done in God's name. It's not an I cast out the demons, I healed her, I touched her. That's bringing pride into it. That's bringing yourself into it. And it's supposed to be about God, because God is what the demons are actually obeying, and God is it's the command of God that makes them leave. It's God that is doing it through, we're the catalyst for God. The exorcists, the priests are catalysts for God. You have to take yourself, you have to take your pride out of it, because if you bring your pride into it and said, look what I did, then you're opening yourself up to those demons, because the demon of pride can attach to you in that manner.
Hard, thanks.
But it's very complicated. It's a complicated thing.
If somebody needs your advice or services, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can go to my website. It's paranormalronin.blogspot.com. Ronin is R-O-N-I-N. It's paranormalronin.blogspot.com. Or you can find me on Facebook, which is Facebook.com/ParanormalRonin.
Robert in Montana happens to be a first-time caller. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Hi. Hey, thank you. It's Roderick, actually, by the way.
Robert.
Roderick.
Robert.
Roderick.
Yes, Roderick.
Roderick. Oh, Roderick. Okay.
Thank you.
So I've got the same ears as my professional screener, I guess.
No, it's all right. So, I have a question concerning symbols.
Okay. Oh, all right.
And seeing them for the past 3 years now, I've been able to see symbols that I really don't know what the meaning is for. And
could you explain what you mean by symbols? Like, are you talking about, like, seeing certain times repeating over and over, or certain numbers repeating, or?
Yeah, like, for instance, I've seen dragonflies, butterflies. I've seen, let me think.
Well, now, hold on, because we're almost out of time here. Okay. What do these symbols mean, Andrea? Insects.
Well, it is, without any more description than that, it's summer, and I'm seeing them everywhere myself. In fact, we've got a little pile of dragonflies outside my door. There's like a little kind of grouping of them that live on our flowers. Like I said, when you talk about symbology, I don't know if you're talking about dreams that you're having, or if you're actually seeing them in person, or if there's like something specific. I don't know his whole story. All I heard was dragonflies and butterflies, and that could really mean anything, or it could mean just it's the time of the year where that stuff is out and, you know, flying around. So I really can't tell.
But those specific insects really don't have any concrete things to do with the demons,
not
do they?
Really, not necessarily. I mean, sometimes a person might dream of a butterfly And a lot of times people might say that that's just a visitation from a guardian angel, or it's a visitation from a loved one letting you know that they're okay and that they are, you know, happy and free. But like I said, at this time of the year, it's summer, butterflies are out, dragonflies are out, and, you know, they're mating. And so there's going to be a big influx before the fall comes. So, I mean, without more to that story, there's really nothing I can say other than, you know, you have to find that answer on your own and try to figure that out. And or contact me on my Facebook page or on my paranormal ronin.blogspot.com page and give me more details, and maybe we can go into it further then.
All right, let's take a few more quick calls. Bob in Chicago. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks.
Sure.
Andrew, I have a question about the Emily Rose possession. I have a page here where the devil was actually talking to the priest. She was supposed to be possessed by six demons, Nero, Judas, Cain, and do you have any information about this? These quotes from the demons talking to the priest when they gave her the exorcism. She was.
Are you talking about the Annalise Mitchell possession? That they made a movie called The Exorcism of Emily Rose, but
right, and I guess her real name is Annalise Michelle or McKell.
Yeah, it's M-I-C-H-E-L. I'm not 100% sure how they pronounce it personally, but yeah, Annalise. That's a very hotly contested to this day. You will have some priests that'll say that that's 100% already been, you know, that based on the trial, it was disproven and, you know, the punishment, and they're sweeping it under the rug. But it's a very interesting case if you really go through it. Now, the one thing that I always question is the fact that they say that Judas of Issachar was one of the things that possessed her. The problem that I have with that is talking to the various priests and demonologists and exorcists that I have worked with, human spirits generally do not possess people, and human spirits do not become demonic. Demonic, at least depending, again, on your religious beliefs or where you are, but as a Catholic, we believe that that all demons are fallen angels that rebelled with Satan against God to try to take over heaven, and they fell when he fell, and they became demons based on the sin that they committed during that rebellion, which would be like the sin of lust, sin of pride. But like Judas was a human being. Judas was somebody that passed on. So is it possible that he was one of the quote unquote demons that was possessing? It's a very complicated story, but it's a very interesting story. I think that there was something going on there based on what I listened to, based on the demonic sounds and like the actual recordings, and how there were actually multiple voices were coming out of her at the same time. And I can't think of any way physically that a person can create multiple voices that have different tones and different personalities and different inflections, you know, in some kind of a ventriloquist way, especially when she was in such a state of ill health. And yet she showed so much strength when she was there wasting away. She was practically anorexic, and yet she showed a lot of signs where they actually had to have multiple people try to hold her down at times. And I think there's a lot to that particular case. There's things that I question, but I mean, like our a lot of people say healthy skepticism is important, and, you know, that helps us further the research. But I do think that there was something going on with the Annalise case, and I don't think that it was as simple as, you know, just a misdiagnosis, mistreatment, sweep it under the rug. Everybody's been, you know, fined, and, you know, and now we just don't talk about it anymore. I think it's a very interesting case, and I do believe that there was a potential for demonic possession there.
Andrea, thank you for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Good luck with everything you do. The name of her book, The Ghost in the Coal Cellar. Jimmy Church filling in for me tomorrow. I'll be right back on Monday, though, with more Coast to Coast action for you. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Morrison, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, Be safe, everyone.